Okay, good morning, Shalom Aleichem. Welcome to those who were not here last week. I apologize for insufficient amounts of source books. If anyone wishes for a extra copy or a digital copy, you could email me, wiederblank@hotmail.com. Last week we began introducing the purpose of studying Machshava, why one would do it. And the last thing we saw, which we didn't fully assess, was a Zohar, which is on page 8 of your source books. And the Zohar warns against perceiving the stories of the Torah as merely folk tales. There are better tales in folklore. Rather, the Torah should be understood as conveying profound wisdom, and the physical manifestations are a cloak for esoteric topics. And thus the Zohar decries against superficial understanding of the Torah. Now we should note that it's not necessarily the case that the Zohar is warning against Pshat. Pshat and the superficial understanding aren't necessarily the same. Great Mekubalim, like the Ramban, spend a lot of time trying to figure out what is Pshat. And interestingly enough, oftentimes they note that the Pshat of the Torah most closely corresponds to the Sod of Torah. However, it is warning against superficial understanding. And thus, the Zohar writes that had the Torah not cloaked itself in the garments of this world, the world could not survive. But a person, when studying Torah, has to look beyond the clothing to get to the body and then the soul, as it were, of the Torah. That's essentially what we saw last time. The Pardes Rimonim notes that that's one of the reasons why it's important. It's in your source book on the footnote, footnote 9 on page 9, that it's important when studying Shnai Mikra V'Echa Targum to make sure never to skip a word. While it might be the case that certain parts of Torah seem to be of no particular importance on a level of Pshat or maybe even Drash, oftentimes those sections of the Torah which seem most unnecessary are the sections of the Torah that convey the most profound and esoteric truths. So while Rambam, for example, in Mor Nevuchim offers a reason for the various passages in the Torah that seem to be unnecessary on a level of Pshat, frequently in Torah Sasod you'll find some of the most expansive comments on those seemingly unnecessary portions of the Torah. And we referred to the Ramban last week in footnote 10 on page 9, that the idea that the Torah existed before the creation of the world reflects this notion, the idea that the eternal truths of the Torah existed before the physical world. And while the Torah is written in such a way that teaches us how to live on a physical world and addresses laws in a physical world, Shor Shenaga Chasapara and the like, but those laws are reflection of eternal truths, truths that even existed before the creation of the world. In Sefer Tanya, the Alter Rebbe writes that this is the meaning of the phrase "Oraisa v'kud shebrichu chatu." If you take a look on page 9, Perush de Oraisa hi chachmaso v'ritzono shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu v'HaKadosh Baruch Hu bechvodo v'atzmo kula chad ki hu ayodeya v'hu amada v'chulei u'kemo shekasav l'el b'shem HaRambam v'tzimtzem HaKadosh Baruch Hu ritzono v'chachmaso b'taryag mitzvos HaTorah u'v'hilchosehen b'chdei shekol ha'neshama o haruach v'nefesh shebeguf ha'adam tuchal l'hasigan b'data. So Oraisa v'kud shebrichu chadu means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu v'chachmaso are one, and that chachma is found within Torah. He was mitzamtzem ritzono v'chachmaso in the Taryag Mitzvos and in the Torah, and therefore if you want to arrive at an understanding of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so one studies the Torah. Now it's important to note that he says that this chachmaso ritzono is mitzumsum in tayag mitzvos haTorah uvehilchoseihen, meaning to say that one arrives at an understanding of HaKadosh Baruch Hu v'ritzono by understanding and learning halacha. Now, thus far we've been considering how mystical understandings of the Torah are ways to reach HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We see here, though, that the Alter Rebbe is writing that we learn it through halacha. And, in fact, one could arrive at this, according to some, even without studying the esoteric at all. Perhaps the most powerful expression of this idea is found in Halachic Man, where the Rav writes that Halachic Man's approach to reality is, at the outset, devoid of any element of transcendence. The Halacha is the blueprint of the ideal world, and thus one arrives at knowledge of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Virtzono, not through the study of the esoteric, through mysticism, not even through philosophy, but through the Halacha itself. Rav Lichtenstein sums up the Rav's approach as follows. This is on page 9 in your source books. Torah gives the Jew insight, as direct and profound as man is privileged to attain, into the revealed will of his Creator. Through the study of halacha, the immanent expression of God's transcendent rational will, man's knowledge of God gains depth and scope. Further, religious study is a stimulus to the total spiritual personality. Faith can be neither profound nor enduring unless the intellect is fully and actively engaged in the quest for God. So, as opposed to last week, where we talked about the mitzvah of Yediyas Hashem being fulfilled through the study of philosophy and the study of Kabbalah, here, the Rambam, as well as the Rav, writes that we achieve that knowledge of the Creator through halacha. And thus it's the study of halacha, in a sense more than machshava, that we have a communion with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Elsewhere the Rav writes, the next source, when a person delves into God's Torah and reveals its inner light and splendor, and enjoys the pleasure of creativity and innovation, he merits communion with the giver of the Torah. The ideal clinging to God is realized by means of coupling the intellect with divine idea that it is embodied in the rules, laws, and traditions. So again, it's through the rules and the laws that we achieve this. I'm on page 10. However, halachic knowledge does not remain sealed off. It's a basic idea, skipping to the end. Myriads of black letters into which have been gathered reams of laws, explanations, questions, problems, concepts, and measures descend from the cold, placid intellect which calmly rests on its subtle abstractions and its systematic frameworks to the heart full of trembling, fear, and yearning, and turn into sparks of the flame of a great experience that sweeps man to his Creator. So like we said last week, just as the Rambam writes, the study of science and philosophy shouldn't be a dispassionate intellectual experience, but something that causes an emotional connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so too, the Rav here writes that Talmud Torah, A, gives us insight into HaKadosh Baruch Hu and into his will, and also leads one to a passionate connection with him. So, with this, I think we'll turn to the question that we began last week, which is, what are the various methods to understanding, to fulfilling this mitzvah of Yediyas Hashem, and what are the pros and cons or the debates that concern each of these methods? So, as we alluded to last week, the Rambam's position is that one fulfills the mitzvah of Yediyas Hashem through the study of philosophy. And as I'm sure you're all aware, over the years there has been a significant controversy concerning the appropriateness of the study of philosophy. When you turn to Chazal, there are a handful of sources that seem to oppose the study of philosophy, though the truth of the matter is when you look at how those sources are actually understood by the Mefarshim, even those Mefarshim who don't necessarily support the study of philosophy, they are not necessarily oppositional. For example, last year you may have seen the Gemara in Shabbos. It's on page 10 of your source sheets, Kuf Tes Zayin Amud Aleph, where the Gemara takes a negative view of philosophia. But if you'd like to take a look, which now is not the time to go into the details, but if you take a look at the Rishonim on that Gemara, most of the Rishonim don't understand that philosophia is a reference to what we would call philosophy. Likewise, the Gemaros in Menachos 64b and 99b take a very negative attitude towards Chachmas Yevanis. But again, if you take a look at the Rishonim, Chachmas Yevanis is not understood as referring to Greek philosophy or science or the like. Rashi and Tosos understand it's referring to Ramazim. That's because of the story. The context on 64b makes it clear that this was some means of communication, not exactly clear what it is, but if you take a look at the story, it's not referring to philosophy in the classical sense. And again, it's not just the Rambam who writes this, though the Rambam writes this, or the Meiri writes this, but it's Rashi, Tosfos, Maharal, and others who point out that the Gemaras that are that oppose philosophia or that oppose Chachmas Yevanis are not necessarily talking about Greek philosophy, Greek wisdom, and the like.
It's more than that, Greek philosophy, etc. So what exactly are we referring to? When are we referring to Marshall, which is totally not an issue to point to everyone? And what questions are we talking about, which are the controversial?
Good. So Bezer Hashem, that's, well, hopefully we'll address that that question as we go in a couple of moments and see where the Rambam, what the Rambam gets from Greek philosophy and what those that oppose what the Rambam did, how they oppose it. Excellent question. So, the first issue that one could ask on the Rambam's position is that if philosophy is so fundamental, why is it that we don't have a tradition of philosophy in the Jewish tradition? Meaning to say, before the medieval period, before Rambam and Rav Sadia Gaon and the Chovos HaLevavos and the like, we don't really have rigorous philosophy in Midrashim, in Chazal, and the like. Why not? And does that indicate that it's not a Jewish approach? It's something that Chazal didn't support. So the Rambam answers no, it's not a proof. Originally, we had our own tradition of philosophy. We find Shlomo HaMelech referring to it in his works. However, the Rambam writes that it was forgotten due to persecution. Remember, the Rambam explains that the truth of the matter is that all of Tarsha Baal Peh was originally oral. What happened was that due to the Roman persecution and the like, there was a fear that it was going to be forgotten. Eis lasos l'Hashem heiferus arasecha, and Reb Yehuda Nasi wrote down the Tarsha Baal Peh in violation of the restriction as an emergency measure to prevent the Torah from being entirely forgotten. Now, a similar thing happened with respect to the Torah's esoteric wisdom. There was a fear that it was going to be lost. However, in this case, the Rambam writes that it was not written down. Why not? Perhaps no such measures were taken because it would be even more inappropriate to write down esoteric wisdom. We'll see in a moment how the Rambam justified his writing it down. Or perhaps it could be, since it wasn't necessary that the masses know it in the same way as it's necessary that they know halacha, so it was possible to keep the tradition in an oral fashion even throughout the persecution. Whatever the reason is, the measure of writing it down did not happen. And therefore, we don't find, for the most part, explicit philosophical discussions in Chazal. Now, that's not to say that the Rambam does not turn to Chazal to shape his philosophy. As we'll see shortly, very frequently the Rambam supports his positions from Midrashim and from Mamarim in Chazal, and he understands that frequently Chazal were referring to philosophical ideas. But we don't have the same type of full system like we do with Mishnayos and Gemara, and that, the Rambam says, does not reflect the fact that wasn't an appreciation traditionally of this sort of Chachma. So, because the Rambam writes it was largely forgotten, we turn to Aristotle and other great philosophers to arrive at the truth. The fact that their positions come from non-Jewish sources and the like is okay. The Rambam famously writes, accept the truth from he who says it. If you take a look on page 11, the top source is where the Rambam writes that, know that many of the branches of science relating to the correct solution to these problems were once cultivated by our forefathers, and he explains why they were forgotten. And in Shmona Prakim, the next source, he writes, it's important to know that I did not originate the ideas expressed or the explanations offered either in these chapters or in my commentary. Rather, they have been collected from the words of the Midrash, the Talmud, and other works, as well as from works of the earlier and later philosophers, and from the works of many others. And he says that it's okay to turn to non-Jewish sources with respect to coming to an awareness of the truth, because one should accept the truth from whoever writes it. Now, it's also true, and here we have another issue, which is, isn't it a problem to turn to Greek sources, to Aristotle and the like? Wasn't their position, their philosophy, fundamentally opposed to the Torah? If we are using Aristotle to come to an understanding of God, an understanding of the truth, well, isn't that a problem? Wasn't he severely misguided? So the Rambam here writes that was not the case. For the most part, there's significant compatibility between the worlds of Torah and philosophy. That's not to say that they agree about every single topic, and as we'll see, there are times where Rambam rejects Aristotle's view. One famous example is his position on creation, where Aristotle argued for the eternity of matter and the Rambam argued for Bria Yesh Me'ayin. But for the most part, there is indeed compatibility. If you take a look at the third source, from 325 in Mor Nevuchim on page 11, when you examine this work, when you examine the view, this view, and that of the philosophers, taking into consideration all preceding chapters that are connected with this subject, you will find that there is no other difference of opinion as regards any portion of the universe, except that the philosophers believe in the eternity of the universe, as we mentioned, and we in creation. We noted earlier, when we first started, the Rambam in Perashat Mishnayos and Brachos makes a similar point. So, therefore, at times, we are going to turn to Greek philosophy to understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for example, to understand the universe, to seek proofs for the existence of God, and the like. And that's not to say that our tradition opposes that. Again, the Rambam in 171 says, we too had a tradition of philosophy, and too accept the truth from whoever said it, and see, there is generally confluence on most issues. Now, the problem, though, is that many people do indeed perceive contradictions between philosophy and Torah. And in fact, the Rambam writes, that's the purpose of his work. The Mor Nevuchim is written to someone who has studied some philosophy, studied some Torah, and sees contradictions. And the Rambam's work is to try to address those seeming incompatibilities. And the Rambam writes that a lot of the incompatibilities come from a misunderstanding of Torah, not knowing how to properly read Torah, One possibility is reading it literally, for example. It's the seeming contradiction between philosophy and Torah comes from an incorrect reading of the Torah. If you read the Torah literally, for example, you might come to the conclusion that God has a body. Obviously, that's something incompatible with philosophy. Through philosophy, one can prove that God is incorporeal. However, that seeming contradiction stems from not knowing how to properly learn Torah. Likewise, the Rambam's earlier work, which he never actually fully wrote, but he writes that again, a lot of times people see Midrashim as being incompatible with philosophy, and he writes that's because they're misunderstanding Midrashim, they're taking them too literally and the like. So the incompatibility, the seeming incompatibility between Torah and philosophy oftentimes stems from a misunderstanding of Torah. Also, the Rambam writes, it stems from misunderstanding of philosophy, and therefore much of the goal of Mor Nevuchim is to correct those misunderstandings and show that while there might be discrepancies, overall, they're not fundamentally oppositional. Now, yeah?
By that logic, wouldn't that mean that studying like the Christian New Testament in its entirety would not be a problem either, because even though most of it is accurate, there's a few things that are wrong also?
I don't know if the Rambam would say that most of it is accurate and there are a few things that are wrong. Okay. The Rambam, the New Testament is additional issues. It's begeder Sifrei Avodah Zarah, according to the Rambam. There's a prohibition against studying Sifrei Avodah Zarah based off of Lo Sasur Acharei Levavchem V'Acharei Einechem. The Rambam himself, of course, did study Sifrei Avodah Zarah. You see that because he frequently quotes them in the Mor Nevuchim. And there are certain heterim. The Rambam writes that the members of the Sanhedrin have to know Sifrei Avodah Zarah, Tapaskin Shilas and Avodah Zarah. The Miri writes about how Lahavin Lahoros applies to Sifrei Avodah Zarah, and there are certain benefits that we could get from studying Sifrei Avodah Zarah, but I think that the Rambam would draw a major distinction between Sifrei Avodah Zarah and philosophy, because philosophy is, as I said, largely correct, and there's a lot of important wisdom that we could gain from there. I would imagine that for the most part, and for most people, the same thing could not be said in the case of the New Testament, where our approach would be there's probably very little beneficial information we could get from there, even though some of it might be correct. And the dangers are far more significant because it is Bechlal Sifrei Avodah Zarah. Now, again, that's not to say that everyone should study philosophy. In a couple moments, we will see that the Rambam tells us the various restrictions to the study of philosophy. Not everybody should be studying Aristotle, and we'll consider, again, what the Rambam writes, considering who specifically is and should be studying these matters. So, of course, not everybody agreed to the Rambam's position on the study of philosophy. The Maimonidean controversies engulfed numerous communities in the late 12th and 13th centuries. And there were many levels of controversy, quite a number of them, which were quite vicious. A little later on, for example, the Rashba, along with the elders of Barcelona, signed a 50-year cherem against the study of Greek philosophy. But even that was only for those that were below the age of 25. If you want to see the Tshuvas HaRashba, the Rashba's cherem, it's not in your source books, but it's in, if you look, it's in Tshuvos HaRashba, Chelek Aleph, Tuf Tes Vav. And even the Rashba, though he banned the study of philosophy below the age of 25, only did so with respect to non-Jewish sources, meaning to say, wouldn't apply to the Mor Nevuchim or the like. Now, generally speaking, those who oppose the study of philosophy fall into two camps. Those who categorically reject philosophy, and those who feel that there might be some value, but it's too dangerous. Not everybody neatly fits into one camp or the other. For example, the Ramban is very famous in his opposition to philosophy, but at the same time he writes that in certain areas it is appropriate to turn to Greek wisdom, especially in areas where the Torah does not necessarily explicate matters. But again, to perhaps overly simplify, those are the two camps that thinkers fall into. An example of the latter category, meaning to say, again, the first category with those who reject it entirely, and the second is that those who think it's too dangerous. So, for example, Rav Elchanan Wasserman in Kobet Shiurim writes that while it's true that there was a debate among Rishonim whether one should try to prove the existence of God using philosophy, and many of the Rishonim, like the Rambam and Chovos HaLevavos, wrote that it was appropriate, nowadays it's too dangerous to do so. So the danger of studying secular wisdom or philosophy or the like, at least Rabbi Hanan writing in the beginnings of the 20th century, were so great that even if theoretically we would paskin, like the Rambam, that it's important to prove and study, that's not practical nowadays, he writes. The Rambam himself agrees, or would agree, that where the dangers are significant, that pursuit is inappropriate, and therefore, today, he writes it's inappropriate. A fascinating endorsement of this type of position can be found in the Tzlach. The Gemara in Brachos, which is on your source books on page 11, writes, Tana Rabbanan Kshechala Rabbi Elazar Nichnesu Talmid of Levakro Amru Lo Rabbeinu Lamdeinu Orchos Chaim V'nizkeh Ba'an L'chai Olam Haba Amru Lahem Hizar B'gvod Chavereichem U'menu Atzmecha U'menu B'neichem Min HaHigayon. So what does Higayon mean? Make sure not to teach your children Higayon. What's Higayon? So nowadays most people would translate Higayon as logic. The truth is that the Rishonim, for the most part, didn't translate it that way. The Rashbam and others understood that Higayon actually means Pshuto Shel Mikra. That's one of the reasons why Rashbam thinks that you don't find such an emphasis on Pshuto Shel Mikra and Chazal. However, the Tzlach understands that Higayon is logic. And not only that, but he says, and this is on the top of page 12, he says that what's wrong with logic? After all, logic is actually an important tool. He answers that while there is value to studying logic, logic might lead to the study of philosophy, and that's too dangerous. And therefore, we have to restrict that which we study because of the dangers that might arise. So even logic, and certainly philosophy, should not be studied because of the dangers. And that's what the Gemara means, Menu b'neichem min ha'igayon. An example of the former category, a total rejection of philosophy, could be seen in the famous comments of the Gra. Also on page 12, the Gra here writes, Ha philosophia hitaso. This is, he's writing, of course, concerning the Rambam. And he writes that the Rambam, what was the cause of his error? The cause of his error is the accursed philosophy. Berov lekcha lefaresh ha-gemara hakol bederech haltziyi v'la'akor osan mipshutan. In other words, the philosophy with its fair speech seduced the Rambam. He's alluding to the Pasuk in Mishle, in Parak Zayin, Pasuk Chaf Aleph, from the proper intention of the Torah. It's actually comparing philosophy to a zona that seduces a person from correctly understanding the Torah. Now, the particular context of the Gra's comments here concerns Kishuf. The Rambam rejects that Kishuf exists when the Torah refers to magic. It's referring to illusion, but there is no such thing as true magic. And the Gra notes that the simple reading of the Psukim, as well as the simple reading of the Gemara, does seem to imply that there is magic. and what caused the Rambam to make this egregious error, the answer is that he was seduced by the study of philosophy to come to this conclusion. Now, maybe later on in the year we'll talk about this debate, whether or not there is such a thing as magic, and if there is, why is it that we don't seem to see it any longer, and the like. But this is just a reflection of these two schools of thought. Yes?
Just thinking about the thought for a second.
Mm-hmm.
If you're saying DIO means philosophy, but if it just means logic, then how are you supposed to ever read Gemara? Like, Chazal obviously are amazing.
Yeah, so he means formal study of logic.
But even with informal study, like, Chazal are just expert.
Yeah, so that's his point. His point is you can presumably know how to think logically through studying Gemara, and you don't need the formal study of logic to come to an awareness of proper logical thinking, like you point out correctly. The Chachamim in the Gemara and the Rishonim and the like were certainly very logical thinkers, but one might have argued, he said, that it's valuable to study formal logic. And he says that might indeed have some value, but it's too dangerous because it's too close to philosophy. Yeah.
The Gra, despite his harsh criticism of the Rambam, in other places, notably his Buddhist time watch, said that philosophy is the step below Kabbalah.
Okay.
Does he admonish the Rambam imply that he totally?
You are correct, and we're actually going to we'll get to those comments shortly. When, hopefully today, when we discuss how it is that Mikubalim viewed the Rambam, and that's an excellent point, that many sources, not just Reb Chaim Volozhiner, before him and after him, the Ramak writes this and others, understand that philosophy does have a value in terms of understanding the truth. The way you put it is it's one step below the study of Kabbalah, in this so far as it's the way in which we could understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu using our mind. So that is correct. And as I hope to get to shortly, the matter is not as simple as what I'm quoting here. So you're absolutely correct. So among those who oppose the study of philosophy, one of the questions that of course they have to deal with is how do they justify the Rambam's pursuit of philosophy? Now, perhaps earlier on in the Maimonidean controversies, there are those that absolutely rejected and disparaged the Rambam. But as time went on, everybody came to acknowledge the greatness of the Nesher HaGadol, and therefore, we have to, if you are going to say that this is totally misguided, well, how do we understand, how do we justify what the Rambam did? So one of the thinkers to do this is the Rivash. You see it on page 12. And the Rivash offers a number of justifications. Vein lahavi araya min Rambam. This is a tshuva where, again, the Rivash opposes the study of philosophy. He's lukewarm on science. He thinks philosophy is absolutely usur. So how could we justify the Rambam? Ki hu lamad kodem lachein, kol atara kula bishleimas, halachos vagados toseftos, sifra v'sifrei, v'kule talmuda, bavli b'yerushalmi, kemo shenira misefer mishna Torah shechiber. The Rambam, first of all, had mastery of all of Torah before he studied philosophy, as could be seen from his work, the Mishna Torah, which he wrote prior to the writing of the guide. That proof itself isn't particularly compelling, because in Perash HaMishnayos, which he wrote before Mishneh Torah, he shows that he has studied philosophy and strongly supports philosophy, but it still may certainly be the case that the Rambam mastered Torah Sanigla before he began studying philosophy. And in fact, as we'll see shortly, the Rambam writes that one must understand Lachem Ubasar before beginning philosophy. So the first rationale is that the Rambam was a baki b'kol haTorah kula before philosophy. Number two, ukedei lahashiv es haapikoros, asa sefer hamora, lister hamosim v'arayos shehevi hafilosof l'kayim kadmos haolam. The second justification is that the Rambam's writing of the Mor Nevuchim is a fulfillment of the principle Dama Lahashiv La'apikores. And the Rambam, in his Sefer, was attempting to refute the heretical claims that were prevalent at the time, such as the eternity of matter. Now again, here too, it's certainly the case that the Rambam was trying to refute problematic beliefs that were supported by philosophy, and in fact, he was very successful at that. The Ramban, in his famous letter defending the Rambam to the French rabbis, writes about how without the Rambam, so many Jews would have surely gone off the derech, and those who were exposed to philosophy were in fact very, very tenuous in their connection to Torah, and the Rambam brought them back and showed them how one could be a proper Torah Jew and at the same time study philosophy. So that which the Rivash is writing here, that the Rambam was successful in fulfilling the requirement of Dama al-Hashav Lapikoros, is certainly true. It's very hard to say, though, that was the Rambam's intention in studying philosophy. As we've seen, the Rambam thinks that the study of philosophy has inherent value. It brings us to an understanding of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's a fulfillment of numerous mitzvos, as we saw last week. But it is also true what the Rivash writes, which is that the Rambam's work was very much a fulfillment of Dama Lahashiv. It could be that they're related. V'yesh lomar k'moshe amru al Rabbi Meir hechi gamir Torah mipume de'acher v'chulei v'haisa tshuva Rabbi Meir kra ashkach v'darach hat aznacha ushma divrei chachamim v'libcha tashis ledati ledatam lo namar ela ledati. Meaning to say that how was it that Rabbi Meir was able to study Torah from Elisha ben Avuya? The answer was that when you're as great as Rabbi Meir, that was appropriate. And in fact, he has a theory that the Rambam was alluding to this when the Rambam also quotes the Pasuk, Hat Aznecha Ushma L'Divrei Chachamim. The Rambam is being merames in the Hakdama to Mor Nevuchim, that his turning to philosophy was similar to Reb Meir's turning to Elisha ben Avuya. And he writes, therefore, this type of heter is something that is relevant for very, very, very few people. While it might have been appropriate for Rabbi Meir, we see even most of the Chachamim in the Gemara thought that it was inappropriate for them. And likewise, the Rivash writes that we shouldn't extrapolate from the Rambam's pursuit of philosophy that it's appropriate for regular people or even great people, but those not on the level of the Rambam, to study philosophy. And then he writes something along the lines of the Gra, Im kol ze lo nimla taravzal me hamshech ktsas achar hachachma b'ktsas amofsim kigon hatzvartis umamad har Sinai. Even the Rambam, great as he was, did not emerge unscathed, for we see that certain positions that he took are counter to the Torah, and he arrived at those positions because of his exposure to philosophy. For example, he's referring to the Tzarfatis, Rambam's position that the baby didn't actually die and it wasn't total Trias HaMesim or Mamad Har Sinai. Perhaps the Rambam's position that the entire Jewish people only heard the kol and not differentiated words because of the impossibility of experiencing prophecy without proper training. The Ulai Lohaisa Kavanaso Rak Basher lo yuchal lashiv anashim hahem legamrei min hakatzel hakatzei. Maybe the truth is that the Rambam didn't actually mean what he wrote. He only wrote those things because he was trying to bring those back, those who were philosophically inclined, so bring them back to Torah, and he couldn't bring them from one extreme to the other. It's a little ironic here. He's using the Rambam's logic against the Rambam. The Rambam writes, why is it that the Torah uses anthropomorphisms and speaks of God in human or physical terms? The answer is because the people at the time were unable to conceive of God in a totally incorporeal manner. They were not able to grasp that something non-physical could truly exist, and therefore, to bring them back, so the Torah said things that were misleading because this would bring them to a correct understanding, a correct conception, ultimately, of the divine. So he's saying that the Rambam himself did the same thing in his Mor Nevuchim. He said things that were not really correct to bring people back to Torah, because if he told them the undiluted truth, they wouldn't be able to handle that, they wouldn't have accepted it. And therefore, his conclusion, the next paragraph, Umeata Yisa Adam Kavachomer Be'atzmo Im Shnei Hamlachim Ha'ela. He's referring to with the Ralbag as well. The Ralbag also, a great Chacham, but went a little too far in various theories of his. Because of his connection to philosophy, he refers to his theory of a Shemesh Begivon Dom, that the sun didn't really stop. It just has a whole theory as to what the psukim mean. But again, these controversial statements. So if we see that the Rambam, perhaps someone as great as he, was made some mistakes due to exposure to philosophy, so the Rivash concludes, certainly an alachas kama v'kama, that something that you or I or we should not pursue. There are other ways that there are those that justify the Rambam's pursuit of philosophy. There's a famous letter, likely forged, that states that the Rambam writes at the end of his life he regrets the various that he spent so much time on philosophy, and he wished that he would have spent more time focusing on Torah and the like. So there are other theories, other ways to justify that which the Rambam did. How do we paskin halacha l'maisa? So what's fascinating is if you turn to the Shulchan Aruch, which is your next source on page 12, you get a very mixed message. The Shulchan Aruch writes, or this is really the Rama writing, Hagah, Ve'en lo adam lilmod ki im mikra mishna gemara poskim hanim shachem achareihem uvezeh yikna olam haba, yikna olam hazeh v'olam haba avalo b'limud shar chachmos. And it quotes here from the Rivash. So, on the one hand, the Rama says we paskin like the Rivash, but then he keeps on writing. Umikol makom motor lomod ba'akrai b'shar chachmos uvilvad shelo yu sifrei minim v'zeu nikra bein hachachamim tiol b'pardes v'ein la'adam l'tayel b'pardes rak la'achar shemilei kreis u'basar v'yayin v'hu leid ha'asar v'ha'heter v'dinei mitzvos. The Rama, after paskening the Rivash, then paskins the Rambam. The Rama accepts the Rambam's understanding of Maisa Bereishis and Maisa Merkava. Here too, the Gra gets upset. He says that by calling philosophy Maisa Merkava, this shows that he didn't know what Maisa Merkava is. But the Rama himself writes that Maisa Merkava is. Rambam was correct in his understanding of Maisa Merkava and Maisa Bereishis, and therefore there is value. However, this should not be one's primary focus in Torah study. It should be done be'akrai. And in fact, last week we saw the Tshuvas HaRama, in which the Rama writes how he himself studies the Mor Nevuchim and the like, though not during Seder, only during Bein Hazmanim. Yeah.
Inherently, any time you spend studying things that are true and lead you to wisdom, you're already studying philosophy. Presumably, it's impossible to wait to start having true or correct thoughts.
Okay. So we'll get to the Rambam's restrictions and Yesodei HaTorah, in other words, when and at what stage should somebody begin studying philosophy And we'll see what we'll see what Rambam actually says in terms of when it is that a person should start studying philosophy. He addressed that question both in his Akdamah to Marnevuchim and also in Hilchos Yisod HaTorah. So we'll get there shortly. But you are correct in noting that the word philosophy refers to many things for different thinkers, but even for the Rambam. And perhaps when different aspects of philosophy have different dangers, some are greater, some are less, when is it appropriate? And you see that even within Chazal's understanding of the distinction between Ma'aseh Bereishis and Ma'aseh Merkava, where the Mishnah and Chagiga has different restrictions. How should Ma'aseh Bereishis be taught? And then there are even more restrictive rulings in terms of how Ma'aseh Merkava should be taught. So you are correct that it's important not to jumble everything together. And again, this is, you know, what we're doing today, and maybe for one more week is a hakdama. We haven't really begun learning. Maybe we're spending too much time being makdim. But that's what we're getting to. Yes.
When you say how do we paskin, what halacha are we paskin?
So it's okay, it's a fair point, and I guess I should also, you know, it's also the case that the Rama doesn't necessarily have the last word. The matter continues to be debated ad hayom hazeh, but it is also true that there is a halachic question here, meaning to say that according to many poskim, it's aser. According to other poskim, it's rishus. According to the Rama, it's akrai, but it shouldn't be ikar. This is a halachic question, and as a halachic question, then one needs to figure out what the normative halacha is. And if it's a machlokas rishonim on a matter of halacha, so just like all matters of halacha that the rishonim debate, we try to figure out what is the halacha lemaisa. So too here, what one would and should try to figure out what the halach lemaisa is.
Mm-hmm. When you say, even going back on that, when you say, we Rishonim say it's us based on what? Based on the main reason of the Gemara?
So many Rishonim say based off of Dina de Gemara, and others either citing specific Gemaras or citing principles that the Gemara applies. For example, it is clear that the Gemara understands that studying things that will lead or may lead a person astray is aser. That's an iser that certainly everyone agrees to, including the Rambam. So if you think that it is likely that philosophy will lead a person astray, then you'll also think that it's aser to study. And that's a formal iser. Yeah, there is a slight difference between Raman Hilchos Shabbos and here. I think they're compatible, but it's different. There he's talking about what type of Svarim could be read on Shabbos and the like. Sefer Emanuel. Yeah, well, maybe we'll get back to that Rama. But I think the basic ruling of the Rama is indeed pretty straightforward. Just Derech Agav, we mentioned the Rivash's harsh critique of the study of philosophy and the dangers that lurk within the study of philosophy. We should also note that there are significant dangers with respect to the study of Kabbalah. And as we mentioned last week, the Rama writes that the dangers in the study of Kabbalah are actually greater than the dangers of studying philosophy. The Rivash himself writes that he's very uncertain about the appropriateness of studying Kabbalah. Now, this is significant. Even though the Rivash comes from the school of the Ramban, the Rivash writes, here you have it on where is it? Page 13, thank you. Top of 13. This is part of a longer tshuva where the Rivash lambasts those who study Kabbalah without a qualified teacher, and he's especially concerned about meditations on Sphiros while praying. In fact, just yesterday, I had a question from a student in a class I was teaching, someone who had some exposure to Kabbalah, and when I mentioned the Torah's opposition to the Trinity, he said, what's the difference between the Trinity and Spheros? And in fact, that very equation is made by this Rivash. V'gam hodaticha ki mori harav peretz hakohen lo haya klal medaber v'lo machshev b'osan hasfiros. My Rebbe didn't pay attention to those spheros. Gam shamati mepiv sharav Rebbe Shimshon mekinon shaya rav gadol mikol bnei doro v'gam ani zachor mimenu v'im lo ra'isi b'einai v'hu haya omer ani mispala ladas ze hatinok. I pray like a simple child. Kolomar lahotzi milev hamikbalim shemis palalim pam lesfira achas upam lesfira achas kefi inyan atfila. And the Rivash famously he writes, actually he quotes that point that if you misunderstand these ideas of spheros, they do very much seem like something similar to the Trinity. And the Rivash writes, he explains what it means in the continuation of the Tshuva, what they mean, that they don't really contradict Achdus Hashem, but he concludes, Lezani Omer She'en Lismoch B'Dvarim Ka'elu Ela Mipi Chacha Mekubal V'Adayin Ulai. When it comes to matters of Kabbalah, one should only rely on a Chacha Mekubal. Don't just trust any old person. Some have suggested that if you one's Rebbe in Kabbalah should also be someone who's a gadol in Torah Sanigla. And even then, adayin ulai. So there are those who detect in the words adayin ulai that maybe the Rivash was opposed to all Kabbalah. Others understand that differently. The earlier part of the Tshuva doesn't sound that way. But one way or the other, the very same Rivash, who writes about the dangers of studying philosophy, writes as well about the dangers of Kabbalah. And as all thinkers note that this aspect of Talmud Torah is one which is dangerous. As we last week we mentioned how almost all thinkers do support the idea of some type of meta-halachic aspect to Talmud Torah, the importance of studying things other than halacha, of understanding HaKadosh Baruch Hu, of whether that's through mysticism or through philosophy. But it's also true that that there are dangers in both. One last source on this topic, on the bottom of page 13, is from Rav Kook. We mentioned last week the Ramah's position that one should embrace both the philosophical and the mystical tradition. Rav Kook was another thinker who took this position, and I think his approach to the machlokes between Kabbalah and philosophy is one which is very powerful. The Rav Kook, like the Ramah, writes that both views, both mahalchim, are elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim. And though Rav Kook was a great mekubal, he valued the study of philosophy and frequently incorporates aspects. And he deals with a very interesting question, which is, if they're both true, and they're both different means to come to a correct understanding of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, whether it's through philosophy, meaning to say through using the human intellect to come to an understanding of God, or through Kabbalah, meaning to say coming to an understanding of HaKadosh Baruch Hu through tradition, both are true. Well, why is it that both camps saw the other camp in such oppositional terms? Maybe later on we'll see what the Rambam had to say about Mekubalim, but it wasn't so praiseworthy. And likewise, we've seen some of the things that Mekubalim have said about the Rambam in the study of philosophy. Well, why is it that if they're both really true, and our approach nowadays should be Elu v'Elu Divrei Elokim Chayim, well, why is it that they are both seen in such oppositional terms. And he writes a very fascinating idea. He says that it was important for the development of Torah that each school of thought reach, go as far as it can. And the only way that could happen is if it was studied exclusively. In other words, if everybody always had the approach, you could do it this way, you could do it that way, and the like, then the chelak of Torah of, let's say, philosophy would not have reached the conclusion that it should reach. Let's take a look at some of what he says. B'doroseinu v'kama doro shelefaneinu sheshaktu haruchos v'shamesh hatztaka shel harambam pirsha es ha'ora al p'nei kol ofek hayadus. So, since the Maimonidean controversies have died down, and everybody recognizes the greatness of the Rambam, so how do we look at this debate? He's actually in this letter, in this piece, taking issue with the historical approach of someone named Reb Zev Yavitz, or Jowitz, who was a historian and depicted Rambam's philosophical positions as being heavily influenced by non-Jewish thinkers. And he writes, that's not the appropriate approach. Nichnas gam ha-mora b'chlal sifrei ha-kodesh shem kinyanei ha-Torah. The mora nevuchim is b'chlal sifrei ha-kodesh. V'chalil lanu linhog bo minag shel zilzol. V'chovosenu hayom lo rak ladun es devarav l'kaf schus. Meaning to say, if we see something that seems problematic, we should judge it favorably. Ki im gam lehis amek bahem ulemitzvos es midosav betor midosa shel Torah. Kemo beguve elchosa shel Torah yesh nam panim shonim v'chiluke deos. V'anu noagim l'kayim bahem es midas atar shel aseos nechakafar ches es ushma divrei hametarim v'divrei hametamim. Just like when we learn a sugya. So what's our goal? To understand the shita that's oser and the shita that's matir. Even if we were to paskin lahalacha lahakel, we learn a sugya and we try to understand the shita that's machmir also. And we say elu v'elu. And that's really, what Bezras Hashem we're going to do in this year. We're going to learn topics in Machshava like we'd learn any other sugya. Any other sugya, so you learn shita sarambam and you learn shita saraivit and the like. And we try to understand both of them. And that's what the Rav Kook writes we have to do. Divya Mizakim, Vidivya Machaivin, Divya Apostle, Divya Machshivin, Mipneshakula Nitnu Meiro Achad. They all come from the same source. They all come from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Afal Pisha Linyan Alach Lemaisna Yeshna Achram Yuchedes Laachas Menadeos, Kach Mida Amino Heges Beholchos Hadeos Vamunos, Shehelu Chachme Israel Hamuchzakim Lavos Uma, Gedolia Torah Vanchia Kodesh, Chalila Lanu Lahakel Rosh Negdam, Ulahachlit Alachas Mideos Seyem Shem Devarim Chitzonim. We shouldn't even simply say about one of their opinions that, this is external to the Torah. The Rambam's position here comes from the Greeks. V'shehem nidchim migvul Yisrael. V'kav ha-chomer sh'asu linog minog zeh neged deosat shel aviyam shel Yisrael ha-meir enei adoros b'toraso chachmaso v'kdushaso Rabbeinu Rambam Zal. V'gam be'elu adeos asher anu motzim sh'rabim e'chachmei adoros cholken alem. Even when it comes to matters in the Rambam that we find that most of the chachmei adoros disagree with the Rambam. Yicholim anachnu rak lomar shehinenu Muchra'e Muchra'im Lahachzik Hadeo Shirov Gdol Yisrael Natu Aleihem. We're going to support the position of the majority of the Chachamim of Alchas V'Shalom Lahachlit Al Deosef Shal Rabbeinu Agadol Shein Deos Chitzonos Chitzonios Chalila. Now, this is very important. Rav Kook knows that that the Rambam derived a great deal from Chitzoniastika sources, meaning to say from Aristotle or from Greek philosophy. The Rambam writes that this is true. So if Cook here in his letter writes, no, everything that the Rambam says is kulo Torah, comes entirely from a Makom Kedusha. What does he mean? He means to say that the Rambam filtered everything he saw through the lens of Torah. And while it might be the case that the Rambam saw ideas in external sources and believed in the importance of Kabbalas Amis Mimisha Amaro, nevertheless, it was filtered through Torah. So everything the Rambam writes is Torah. V'achresh Rabbeinu Rambam Shetoras Hashem Haisa Mikur Chayav Matza Es Levavo Neman LaHashem V'Litoraso V'Amo Be'Ela Deos Halo Zeh Dover Be'atzmo Shu Hatzara Machriya She'en Ban Dover She'yuchal Hatil Tina Belev O Lidchos Esmi Shuhu Mikudeshes HaTorah Mikdushes HaTorah V'Kdush Yisrael. Nothing that the Rambam said, the Rambam was such a Kadosh, nothing that the Rambam said could ever be not Kadosh or hurt a person spiritually. V'Hachra B'Zehu Nisuna Lefi Amatzav Hanashi V'Tfisas HaTziyos HaRuchaniyos Shokol Echad V'Echad Lefi Tchunasu V'Kol Lefi Mashu. It might be the case that different people have a proclivity to certain types of Torah. Chai V'Adam Lilbo B'Makom Shalibo Chafet. And if you find things that the Rambam writes unappealing, though not everybody has to study Mor Nevuchim, but at the same time, while you don't have to study the Mora, don't disparage it. Don't think it's anything less than Kulo Kadosh. So on that note, I want to wish you a wonderful Shabbos, and I'll see you next week, Be'ezras Hashem.